to Radio Migrante Podcast. On July 31st, 2006, after dropping off his 8-year-old child at her school, Dr. Constancio Chandu Claver and his wife Alice were savagely ambushed by two unidentified men while they were entering a crowded intersection in the center of town. As a result, his wife sustained 7 gunshot wounds, which resulted to her death, while Chandu sustained 3 gunshot wounds, resulting to severe damage to his left arm as well as internal organs. Chandu and his wife were victims of Gloria Macapagal Arroyo's Oplan Bantaylaya, or Operation Plan Freedom Watch. Oplan Bantaylaya equates the underground organizations of the CPP, NPA, NDF with what it calls sectoral front organizations. These are people's organizations and progressive party lists such as Bayan Muna, Gabriela, and Anak Pawis. Chandu was in Toronto and talked about his experience, Oplan Bantaylaya, and the coming Philippine election.
You probably have heard about the happenings that have been going on, the latest of which was the arrest of 43 health workers as well as doctors and nurses in Rizal and Morong. These were doctors from the Council for Health and Development and doctors from the Community Medicine Foundation who have been conducting trainings for community health work among community health workers in Rizal. That was one of the things that I was doing when I was in Kalinga. I formed the organization called the Community Health Concerns for Kalinga, and our task was to do self-reliant community-based health programs based on primary health care in barangays, in the levels of barangays. And in our case, we've been able to do that in 16 barangays in Kalinga. What we do is that we do training of community health workers so that they are able to do what they have, that they could do in the level of the community without having to access other resources. And these same things were the ones that were being done by the doctors and nurses who were in Morong. They were doing community health workers training among community health workers in Rizal. And for that, they were arrested and they were charged with trump-up charges like they allegedly found grenades and claymore mines in their bags, and which was the reason that they charged it to be a seminar for bomb making. And because of that, they have been arrested and have been remained incognito to their relatives. There have been reports of psychological torture and as well as physical torture among the 43, and this is something that has drawn the attention of international groups, including Canada, groups here in Canada, in order to respond to the arrest of these 43 people. All these are part of the plan of government to stifle whatever the groups that have been working historically for social change in the Philippines. The Council for Health and Development, for example, and the Community Medicine Foundation are familiar to me. I was the former board member of each of these groups in different times from 1990s to the present. And I know for a fact what they do because I've been involved in that kind of work. And I know for a fact that we've been doing this for years, since 1974. And these are things that has never drawn such an attention from the military until now. So as you can see, the level of ferocity of attacks on organizations and the persons involved with these organizations have actually increased. With the impending deadline, self-imposed deadline, of the military to try to end the insurgency, these terror tactics have escalated. And the case of the 43 health workers is an example for us to see. And all this have been happening in a culture of impunity. From 2001 up to now, wherein we have more than a thousand extrajudicial killings, and not one has actually been convicted for any of this. Not because there's any lacking evidence, but there is no political will to actually go after the perpetrators. The impunity for charging people who are actually perpetrators has actually contributed to the Ampatuan massacre. You've read about it, and it could be seen in that light too. And also the arrest of the 43. They're thinking now that they could do what they couldn't do before, trumping up charges against health personnel and things like that. These were never done before. Now they're doing it now. In my case, for example, my case was the first case after Bobby De La Paz of a direct attack on a health professional. The last report was Bobby De La Paz. That was 1970. So as you could see, the level of ferocity is getting higher. And it is something that we should be well aware of and we should be watching for. Sabi nung mga kwan, law enforcement, law enforcement and everything, when Philip Alston went to the Philippines to investigate, it was a good investigation because you know what he did in February 2007? He was able to talk to everyone from the president, Makapagal Arroyo herself, down to the implementing agencies, the NBI, the peace, the Philippine National Police, the military, down to the levels of the lower units. He was able to talk to them about the cases, and of course he was able to talk also to the relatives of the victims and the organization supporting the victims. And so one of the things that he asked the National Police and the National Police was that, so why isn't there any investigation on this? Oh, we are investigating, but the witnesses don't want to say anything, right? Because in my case, for example, we were not lacking in actually relating with the Philippine National Police in trying to get a hold of who the perpetrators were. We cooperated very fully, and we actually even had a lot of meetings with them, including the Philippine National Police at the level at the national level. We coordinated with the task forces that actually did the investigations and everything. But what happened in our case was that they all blamed everything on technicalities. So that to the point that what happened was that they came up with a haphazard investigation that resulted in the case being thrown out. Rafael Marcos Bangis was the vice chairperson of Bayan Muna, Kalinga. I was the chairperson. So he was killed in June 2006. All over the country, the extrajudicial killings were happening. But never was it happening really in North Cordillera until June 2006. So when that happened, we knew that there was something happening. Second, I was doing an interview on the Radyo Natin FM radio on the issue of I think it was on mining, or was it on? It was on social issues. I was doing an interview then, and at the time I was doing the interview, my wife got a text message that said, "Matapang si Doc, hindi niya kayo mahal." We took that as a warning. The ambush happened on a Monday. That Friday, I went to my clinic, and when I got to my clinic early in the morning, I found it plastered with anti-communist leaflets. It was the only one that was plastered with anti-communist. There were vacant walls on both sides of my clinic, and they were bare. But the whole front of my clinic was plastered with anti-communist leaflets. This is a pattern that has happened in other cases, previous cases before. There is usually a period of vilification, meaning there's a period wherein they vilify you as an enemy of the state, you know, in whatever form, either by through rumors, through plastering of posters or whatever, which usually precedes an incident. And so we took this as a warning. Actually, I remember my wife, when we started pulling down the posters, my wife said, "I think this is it." So we did. We had to do something. But of course, there were things that we couldn't really do. Like, we couldn't stop the clinics. We couldn't stop my children from going to school. I still had to do that. Although we tried some adjustments in our routine, we were thinking that if something would happen, it would happen a little, we'd have a little more time. But unfortunately, by Monday, it happened. Second, dun sa question ng thing about a purge. The purge theory was the theory that is being bundled out by the Philippine military and the Philippine National Police. From day one of the killings in 2001 up to the present, what they are saying is that hindi kami yan. We did not do that. It probably is another purge by the communists. Maybe they're killing off their own people. That's what they've been saying before. And actually, when it happened to Marcos Bangit, the battalion commander of the 41st Infantry Battalion that was stationed in that area, actually made the same charge that Bangit might have been executed by his fellow comrades in the Communist Party of the Philippines. And I answered him publicly. I made a statement and said, "Bangit, if ever he was a member of the National of the New People's Army of the Communist Party, would be more valuable alive than dead." I told that to Colonel Ardisabal, and it was something that I espoused in everything that we did. I do not believe. Second, what about in our case? In my case, it was done right in the middle of the town. You know the picture there? That was the center, right in the center of Bulanao. That's the center, town center. It's 500 meters from the main provincial headquarters of the Philippine National Police. 500 meters. In our case, they threw out a lot of theories up, like he probably had a patient who got pissed off because made a wrong medical decision. He probably is being threatening the political ambitions of some politicians, you know, because maybe he intended to run as a politician himself. And of course, the theory that it was a purge. So it was not just the purge, you know, but I do not believe that any criminal would be so brave to be doing it right in the middle of the town. Second, in their escape, they had to run through three checkpoints, and the escape vehicle went through three checkpoints. Okay, and they usually had a fast response, but in my case, they never were notified. The reason that the policeman gave was that they couldn't contact them because their cell phones ran out of power. In the first place, that presupposes that I am a member of the Communist Party of the Philippines or the National Democratic Front, no? Which, in the first place, is the basis of everything that they're trying to say. It is part of the vilification campaign and the attempt to try to legitimize. We didn't mention there was that in December in 2006, I went to Europe and I did a rounds of talking about what's happening in the Philippines. And then when I came back on Christmas, that was the first time I got my children again together. But on the first week of January, a fellow doctor was working in Tabuk, received a text message. It said, "Paki warning ke Dr. Claver na dahil nahihirapan yung search team sa kanya, they plan to use the kids to be able to get to me. And then meron pa, basta just a full text. It's all in the testimonies, but basically that was it. That was when I made the decision that I think maybe I should get them out of the country. And so that was when I decided to move out. Anyway, the last day of February in 2007, we left. I left with my 3 kids and arrived here in Canada March 1. That's the reason I brought them here, because I believe that they were not safe there. So what's happening in the last and in the next few months too? There's an election coming in, actually. They do have, I think some of you have seen the exposure of the media, of the briefing papers that the military has done on this, having to relate with these killings. Their briefings prove that people's organizations, including the Cordillera People's Alliance, the NCCP, National Council of Churches, and a lot other of organizations have been classified as possible sectoral front organizations of the Communist Party of the Philippines and the National Democratic Front. These are included in their briefing papers, which have been exposed by the media. And as you can see, it is a change in the way that operation plans are being conducted. In the past, all presidents from the time of Marcos up to the time of Estrada have had their own operation plans against insurgents. But they have something in common. All of these operation plans went after the armed insurgents. What is new in Oplan Bantalaya of Gloria Macapagal Arroyo is that they reclassified the enemy to include supposedly front organizations of the Communist Party of the Philippines. So this includes the organizations which they suspect to be part and parcel of the machinery of the National Democratic Front. And so this puts its members as legitimate targets for neutralization. They tried Oplan Bantaylaya 1 from 2001 to 2004, but it really didn't work. But it did get a lot of people killed. And then they extended it to Oplan Bantaylaya 2, which would be ending this June. And their broadcast intention is to finally cut the insurgency, but it's not happening. What is happening is a lot of dead bodies. Another contribution to that is because of the support of the United States on this policy. After 9/11, the Bush government termed the Philippines as its second front, Southeast Asia, particularly the Philippines. And in doing so, they put in $4.6 billion into the armed forces of the Philippines. And so this has emboldened the Philippine government to open up Oplan Bantaylaya to go after what it terms enemies of the state. Anyone anti-government is classified as enemies of the state and should be neutralized. The support of the United States has much to do with the escalation of the killings. However, we cannot be too complacent also about having any change of government, because we are seeing a lot of movement in the part of Gloria Macapagal Arroyo to be the fourth candidate, right? So I think it was only yesterday or when that we see that she's being groomed to be the Speaker of the House. With regards to human rights and extrajudicial killings, I do not see anything much changing with any of the three. Chiroro's, of course, part of the Gloria Macapagal Arroyo and has been part of the security cluster overseas policies on national defense and counterinsurgency. Noy is there, but of course he belongs to the same class and also relative of Teodoro. Maybe Villar is a new face, but basically we do not see any previous record in their political life that would say that they would actually change the situation of human rights in the Philippines. It is something that we could only hope.
We have to understand that many of the many of the reasons that we are here is because of things in the Philippines. Oh, like me, I'm here because of what happened in the Philippines. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. I was about to retire then. So we are here because of things happening in the Philippines. And because of that, I believe that there is still some interest among us to have something done in the Philippines. And what can we do? There are many things that we could do. In the levels of, for example, human rights, for example. Our case is still, the move now is, there are more and more we're exposing things, what's happening to parliamentarians, government agencies here. But I think moved to the level that we might be pushing for some parliamentary hearings on this case, on these cases of human rights in the Philippines. That's in the level of the parliament. But what can we, as people here, do? We cannot do anything if we do not know. That's one thing. And that's the reason why I'm going around. And so, this is something that we should be doing first. Propagating the information and disseminating it. Second is, depending on your status, for those who are actually well-established here in Canada, they have voting power. And we have to remember that we are the third largest visible minority here in Canada. And so, we theoretically have voting power. And if you could show power or influence, they will listen. Now, what about those who are not citizens? For many of us here, many are the breadwinners of our relatives in the Philippines. They are the voters in the Philippines. We may not be. Actually, we could, if we could only get interested. You know about absentee voting? You know that there are only 4,300 all over Canada who registered? And because we have a lot of clout with our relatives, it is also that they listen to us. And many times, anong tingin mo? Anong tingin niyo dyan sa Canada? Sa mga nangyayari rito? Siyempre, if you do not know, you won't have anything to do. Kaya nang bahala dyan. This is the reason that we should be more interested in what is happening in the Philippines and get a pulse of what's happening. And maybe we could give answer things that they ask from the Philippines. And this is something we could do, for example, in this election. In these elections, we've got people running. And I don't know how familiar you are with party lists. Party list is a system wherein you vote for a party platform. So what you're doing is that you're voting for a platform rather than a person, right? A party list can actually, if it gets a certain number of votes, for example, this is an example, there's a computation, but the way it goes is this. After voting all over the country, and this party list gets 300,000, for example, by computation, the computation comes up to 300,000. If it gets 300,000 votes, it gets one congressman. If it gets 600,000 votes, it gets two congressmen. If it gets 900,000 votes, it gets three congressmen. Okay. So who are these three congressmen? These three congressmen will be actually voted upon by the assembly to determine who will sit down as congressman. So what happened was that you voted for the principals, then after that, you get your congressman. So it's a new method. Yeah? And we fought for that. We fought for that. The consistent parties that have been coming up have been from those that were labeled as possible sectoral fronts of the Communist Party of the Philippines. So Bayan Muna, Gabriela, Anak Pawis. These were the party lists that were actually producing, but they happened to be the ones in the sectoral list. Increasing repression on these party lists has actually been a testimony to their effectivity. For this election, they have banded together under a party. It's called Makabayan. And they're espousing the same platform. And they are running two senatorial candidates for the first time. Satur Ocampo and Lisa Masa. This is the first time this is being tried. These are changes that are happening in the Philippines. I hope that the Makabayan platform would be distributed and to be studied by people so that they could see if that is something that they could identify with. And one thing you could do, if you like any party list or you like any platform or anything, including Makabayan, it is something that you could actually campaign for. Basta you get involved.
for listening to Radio Migrante Podcast. Radio Migrante can be heard at CHRY 105.5 FM every other Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m.